Monday, March 7th, 2018. Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. So I'd like to begin today by saying something that I remind myself of on a daily basis, and I think is so very important for us to keep on our minds moving forward with everything going on today. And that's that it's so very important for us to always keep an open mind, as even things we think we know for one reason or another might be false, as something like we just saw on yesterday's show with James Corbett's crime lab story about things like fingerprints and hair analysis that it turns out are not what we thought they were. And that's things I think we all generally kind of assumed we understood. And if history is any guide, it's actually more likely than not that almost all of what we think we know is at the very least incomplete. To dismiss anything offhand without always being able to consider the real possibility that you might be the one holding the false belief will always ensure that you remain stagnant while the world evolves with or without you. As Aristotle said, it is the mark of an educated mind to be able to entertain a thought without accepting it. For the first story of the day, coming from ZeroHedge.com, NSA spied on 534 million U.S. callers in 2017, up sharply from 2016. So this is a story that I feel is probably not very surprising to most, but it, for one reason or another, we've sort of become desensitized to, and the idea that we're all being spied on all the time. And really, this showing that this is 500 million people in this country that were spied on in 2017, I would argue that it's probably more than that. And this is only what we're seeing offhand. But this is something that we need to begin to understand is simply not okay, regardless of whatever new legislation that gets passed or justifications for why this is okay because of some new terror threat. This is a direct violation of our constitutional rights. As Ron Paul puts it, according to the annual report, the U.S. government intercepted and stored information from more than 500 million of our telephone calls and text messages in 2017. This is a 300% increase from 2016. All these intercepts were supposedly legal under the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which is ironic because FISA was enacted to curtail the Nixon-era abuse of surveillance on American citizens. By the way, speaking of FISA, remember the FISA memo that was supposed to be the bombshell that brought down the deep state or shatter the very foundation of our so-called democracy, depending on which side of the false two-party deception you chose to listen to? Yeah, neither do most Americans today. And despite all the verified crimes of the FBI and others within that case, not one person has yet to be held accountable. Just figured I would reiterate that point yet again. And it just goes to show you that terms like national security, which was thrown around in regard to the FISA memo and how it would devastate any number of things should it have been released, which it clearly didn't, are often used to hide the truth from Americans. And then even if and when that truth leaks out, the people are all too easily corralled into the next big moral outrage distraction story, or in the most dire cases, the next manufactured event, while no one of any real import is ever held accountable. Anyway, Ron Paul continues, has the U.S. government intercepted your phone calls and or text messages? You don't know, which is why the surveillance state is so evil. Instead of assuming your privacy is protected by the U.S. Constitution, you must assume that the U.S. government is listening in on your communications. The difference between these is the difference between freedom and tyranny. The ultimate triumph of totalitarian states was not to punish citizens for opposing its tyranny, but to successfully cause them to censor themselves before ever expressing subversive thoughts. Now, that is such a powerful statement, and Ron Paul always has a way of really bringing it right down to the point. And that's something we've discussed so many times in the past, especially what we're seeing more so today than ever is self-censorship. Whether it's because they feel like they're going to be ostracized from their community for not being part of this fake majority, or if they're just afraid to come out against something they see as some omnipotent power. What's happening today is people are choosing to censor their own opinions. And what I've been continually trying to stress to people is that we are quickly beginning to realize that there's this false majority being projected, and that so many people out there are beginning to realize, at the very least, we are not some fringe collection of outside thinkers. I am beginning to see more and more that most everyone today, to some degree, is beginning to question what's going on. And as I said before, that definitely gives me hope. But we need to continue to focus on things like this, like the FISA Act and the idea that under some broad umbrella of protecting us from some phantom enemy, that we are now losing all of our constitutional rights. And that's something that Ron Paul has a tendency to really fine tune and show you what's really going on. But the point is, like always, we should be getting these ideas to the forefront and getting this information in front of people that might not otherwise see it. Moving on to the next story coming from Newsweek.com, NXIVM doctor charged with conducting human experiments. Now, this is one that I was pretty surprised to see in a couple of different mainstream publications online. However, I haven't seen it in any of the major news channels, which tend to be the majority of the people within the false majority looking at Fox and CNN. But this is one that is really shocking, and I think it's a very important one to touch on, because something like this is realistically, many would just kind of reflexively dismiss as even happening if they weren't looking at it in Newsweek.com. But it's a story that is very shocking and something that I think gives you an insight into something that happens more often than we'd like to think. A doctor described as the resident physician to the twisted upstate sex cult NXIVM has been charged by a state oversight board with illegally conducting human experiments. The action comes 8 months after the state health department refused to act on a complaint from a former cult member who alleged that Dr. Brandon Porter forced her to watch disturbing rape and dismemberment videos for a, quote, fright study he was conducting. He is accused of showing human subjects an actual video of horrific and brutal murders and dismemberment of four women by machetes, which right there I asked the question, which wasn't addressed, on whether or not that's something that this cult had a part in. Very interesting. And he also showed them violent clips, including a male African-American being viciously stomped by a Nazi, a conscious male being forced to eat a portion of his own brain matter, and a graphic gang rape. He's also charged with violating state law for improperly conducting studies on obsessive compulsive disorder, Tourette syndrome, and one monitoring the brain waves of those who attended NXIVM programs. So conducting these experiments on unwitting participants, which is interesting. So it really begs the question, what else happened that he's not being found out for? The state also slapped him for not reporting to health officials that many of the attendees, including children, at a 2016 NXIVM event became ill with an infectious illness that produced flu-like symptoms, vomiting, and diarrhea. That's horrifying when you understand that he's conducting these experiments on people who get unwilling and unaware of what's happening, and all of a sudden all of these children and different people break out with some weird disease. I mean, this is the kind of thing that happens more often than we like to believe. And many often argue this is just an isolated case, a bad apple, not indicative of the field or other political circles, except that it is. And despite the conditioned response, they happen quite often, in fact. And if you choose to see it, and it'll really give you insight into the subculture that dominates those in positions of power and their elite circles. And this is something we've talked about many, many times, and which perfectly brings us to the very next story coming from freethoughtproject.com. High-level judge and former Trump campaign chair sentenced to prison for sex trafficking of children. Former district court judge and school board member Tim Nolan pled guilty to 21 counts of human trafficking in February, and this week he was sentenced to 20 years behind bars. This is a story that we covered recently when he got arrested, and even then people reflexively were like, no, it's not true, or it's fake news, and now he's actually been sentenced 20 years for this. Now, this in a way could say, oh, well, here's someone who is important getting held accountable, which I think that's great. But I often argue that someone like this is more of a release valve. I mean, until we see people like the Clintons and people kind of at the top of this pyramid actually getting held accountable, then I'm going to argue that someone like this was simply thrown under the bus to take the focus away from bigger fish. In court, it was revealed that the judge threatened young women and girls under the age of 18 with arrest to force them into sex. On one occasion, a victim was living on his property, and he forced to evict her if she did not have sex with him. He also gave numerous victims heroin. During the sentencing, prosecutor Barbara Whaley read statements from some of the women in court. Whaley noted that 7 of the 19 victims were under 16 years old. During Trump's presidential run in 2016, Judge Nolan was serving as the chair of his campaign in his area. The alleged sex trafficking occurred in August of 2016 while Nolan was working on the Trump campaign. Now, that shouldn't be taken as any kind of an allegation against Donald Trump, although there's other information we could get into which suggests some kind of connection. But the point here is that it happened while he was participating in the Trump campaign, which just, in my mind, it shows you an insight into these elite circles and these political circles. Now, he did try to apologize, but only after it was clear the trial was not going his way, and not before doing everything in his power to worm his way out of it. His attorney actually said during the trial, in his potential day and generation, these acts would not necessarily be considered to rise to the level of human trafficking. Which, what does that even mean when you take a step back and think about that? Is she trying to claim that it, you know, 30 years ago, sex trafficking was not what we think it is today, and that you could take that in so many different ways. That could be, I don't want to dive into guessing at what she meant, but that's such an attorney worm way to try to say something like that, to manipulate the way we see things, it's not as bad as human trafficking, or it wouldn't have been when he was growing up. That's crazy to me. She also accused the victims of lying, despite his guilty plea. She also suggested that his position as a government figure should somehow absolve him of his crimes, despite the fact that he used that position to get away with them in the first place. But now that we're seeing him actually held accountable for 20 years, it's a very, very good thing. That's good news. But the point I'm trying to make with this is that this is not some isolated event. We could get into the idea of Pizzagate and Pedogate, and those are topics in general that people have been conditioned to just reflexively dismiss because of how important they are. But take those names away from it. It's really about people in positions of power, and whether you're talking about pedophilia or sex trafficking, and a documentable occurrence within these circles. Dennis Hastert is a perfect person to bring up, who was the Speaker of the House during George W. Bush's presidency. He's, third in line to the president? I mean, think about that. I mean, that's somebody who went to prison and the judge called him a serial child molester. I mean, again, just one person doesn't mean that there is this secret cult behind it all. But as they continue to line up and we continue to see these pedophile rings, these different things get busted in these circles, how long can people continue to claim that this is some isolated event? There is very clearly a documentable occurrence of these things in elite circles. And that's something that we need to begin to address. Someone like John Whitehead has done an excellent job. He wrote an article talking about how sex trafficking of young girls in this country is one of the hugest problems that gets completely unaddressed. Simply looking into the numbers of people, the children that go missing, I mean, even specifically in the DC area, the number of children that go missing, and then even more specifically within the foster care system, is absolutely mind-boggling, but it gets absolutely no discussion. That should show us more than anything. Moving on to the next story coming from the freethoughtproject.com, federal court proves government loyalty to Big Pharma, rules CBD has no medical value. The federal U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals held up a decision by the DEA to list cannabidiol, CBD, which is a non-psychoactive cannabis derivative, as a Schedule I controlled substance under the Controlled Substances Act. Now, this is important to understand that this is from a federal level. Still, you know, people still make the claim that trumps state law, even though constitutionally it shouldn't. But at the end of the day, what that ultimately means under Schedule I means it has a high possibility for addiction and has absolutely no known medical value, both of which are patently untrue. There's so much information flying around today that shows you that there is all different kinds of medical applications for CBD. The FDA even put out information saying that very thing. Yet we see this happen still today. It shows you insight into people like Jeff Sessions and his influence over the system today, basically grabbing on to this old ridiculous reefer madness mentality. And then I have to understand the direct connection to that kind of talk to people who stand to lose a lot of money with the legalization of these kind of things. Something like CBD that can be grown in your backyard, it directly contradicts and directly threatens Big Pharma's hold on medical treatment. And that's something that they're very aggressively lobbying to stop from happening. The DEA claimed that they had simply provided clarification to an existing law stating that their move, quote, makes no substantive change to the government's control of any substance, which is ridiculously untrue, because the point is that this is something people are beginning to become aware of. They're beginning to change their perspective on these things of absolute importance in the world today, and they're continually trying to roll that back with more propaganda. And that's something we have to begin to recognize, because unless we continue to stand up and do something about it, speak our minds, like the original marijuana movement kind of rose from, this stance against what we know is right, despite their ridiculous archaic laws, we're not going to see any real change. They're going to continue to step back on us as they make up things to happen where we get distracted and look other ways. And next thing you know, we're right back where we started. This is a very important stance that we need to take, and rolls right into the next story, which is very important, coming from people.com. Doctors call CPS on Indiana parents for using cannabis oil treatment on ailing daughter. Now, I don't normally cover topics and discussion from these mainstream type of outlets, and both times I've touched on it today are to make a very important point. Now, this one specifically is, this article does discuss this happening, but it's almost like they cover this in order to try to combat it with their own slightly pressuring propaganda back in the other direction. And I think that's important to note on. But this story is important, and it's something we actually touched on back in 2017. This is the story of a young girl named Jayla. She was having 30 seizures a day since she was 6 months old. And the way that this all progresses, it shows you their ridiculous hold on these archaic ideas and refusal to address the actual medical value that we have seen 100 times over today. And this is a perfect example. So essentially, first, her parents took her to the doctor with knowing that she's having these problems and were just concerned, trying to say, what's wrong with her? You know, do everything you can. Tell us how to help her. And more than once, the doctor say, oh, she's fine. There's nothing wrong with her. Send her home. So until finally, she had a very serious seizure and hit her head. So the mom brought her back to the hospital demanding answers until finally the doctors say, oh, well, yeah, she has epilepsy, which is kind of ridiculous that it takes that kind of forcefulness for the doctors to actually do their job. Now, I don't want to try to judge. Who knows? Maybe there's a reason they didn't see it. But I just find it frustrating to see the dismissive, like, oh, she's fine. Just go ahead, go home. And then all of a sudden they find out she has epilepsy, right? And so now they find out she has epilepsy. And of course, they quickly give her Keppra, a pharmaceutical drug with the potential side effects of depression, suicidal thoughts, severe anxiety, and inability to cope with daily life. So the mother then, of course, seeing those kind of things, actively tried to seek out alternative treatments. Now, a doctor quoted by the People magazine article made the claim that the side effects listed were not all the time and not always certain, and then went on to say that meds like Keppra cannot work up to a third of the time for those who use it. But I bet you the side effects are present to one degree or another at 100% of the people who use it. That's my opinion. And it really comes from people who use pharmaceutical drugs in an attempt to alleviate their symptoms and always talk about the side effects. I mean, that's kind of like a given today. And almost always they just give you another pharmaceutical drug to combat those side effects. And I often make the case that's part of it. I mean, that's where people get a little bit, you know, oh, that can't be true. But I often argue that these side effects are part of the plan. Because all they do is you end up with more and more and more. Next thing you know, you get a table full of pharmaceuticals, half of which are simply to combat the side effects of other pharmaceuticals. So her parents finally decided to give her CBD, and lo and behold, immediately stopped her seizures. They're quoted in saying a 95% reduction right off the bat with zero side effects. I mean, go figure, right? I mean, it's so frustrating to see such an obvious demonstration of how well it's working. The People doctor in the article then said, countering, there's also potential for negative side effects, even though CBD is not a conventional medical treatment. Up to 20% of patients who try CBD for epilepsy have diarrhea as a side effect. Fatigue and lethargy are other most common side effects. I mean, it's just so funny that she feels necessary to throw that in there. Of course, diarrhea we should be worried about, but not inability to cope with daily life and suicidal thoughts. Yeah, those are okay, but diarrhea, oh, we should be careful. I mean, of course, she probably feels obligated to point out any possible side effect, but the point to try to combat that, saying, oh, well, here are some side effects for CBD, it just blows my mind. So you're having a 95% reduction, yet that's the biggest side effect she can point out. But on the reverse side, a third of the time it doesn't work, and then all these terrible side effects. It just, how do you not see that? How do even these doctors continue to support these things? The point is they're just reflexively giving you what they've been taught, and they don't know any better half the time. It's not always the case to make these doctors out to be some kind of evil monster. They're simply just brainwashed with their own false knowledge, the things that they think they already know. And it's the point we made in the beginning, right? Unless you're able to keep an open mind to new possibilities, you're never going to see what's right in front of you. And a lot of these doctors do today. I got to give them some credit. There's a lot of people coming out advocating for this, and that's important to point out as well. Now, the doctor apparently told the parents, many of the doctors that she was seeking at the hospital said, if it's working, go ahead and use it, which I would have been like, hooray, finally, they're trying to come on board. But then, of course, CPS officials were at her house the very next day. The mother actually said, quote, they said they would take her. We were scared to death that they would not only going to take Jayla, but take our other kids too. The officials did not prohibit them from using the oil, but then ordered her to also give the girl Keppra. I mean, how ridiculous, right? So it's okay. The thing that we're saying is illegal. Go ahead and keep using that as long as you use our medication. I mean, isn't that ridiculous? It contradicts exactly what they're claiming. So even if, let's just say, cannabis oil was the worst thing in the world, they're there to stop her from doing that. That's why they're there, right? She's using something that's illegal. But no, this very clearly makes the case that they're there because they're not using the medication. Not because they're using cannabis oil, but because they're not using the medication. That has to say a lot right there. So ultimately they did. They gave her both. And about 5 days after the CPS visit, Jayla began suffering terrible side effects from the drug. Go figure. They said, quote, we had to admit Jayla into the hospital to have her taken off the medication because she was throwing up. She wasn't eating. She wasn't acting like her normal self. She'd walk around the house crying for no reason. That wasn't what we were used to seeing out of Jayla, which is so very important because the article does go on to note that while she was taking CBD, they literally said zero side effects. The only side effect was a lack of seizures. Very important there. So the couple stopped giving her the Keppra, but now they're continuing to treat her with the oil. The mother had said Jayla's condition has continued to improve, of course, once again, now that she's off the medications and only using CBD oil. But the family lives in constant fear that the CPS, the Child Protective Services, will return and try to make these claims again. Now, interestingly enough, the parents have filed a lawsuit against the Child Protective Services, alleging that officials took a blood sample from Jayla without a warrant and prohibited them from seeing more than one doctor. There's an 11-page complaint that was filed with the Southern District Court. I mean, think of the overreach there. This is disgusting to see this kind of thing happen, where they're taking blood samples from your children without your consent, and they're telling you who you can and can't see. Very reminiscent of what we just saw with the child in the UK. That was basically the doctors refused to allow them to get any other treatment. It was Alfie. It's very reminiscent here. So it's not just something happening in the UK. This medical kidnapping and this idea of these that they have more right over your children than you do is a very alarming prospect. But I also want to note on some past cases, something I've written about quite a bit, someone named Alyssa Erwin, who has documentably cured her own brain cancer, twice in fact, using CBD oil. And the sad note that I make in one of these articles is while she was curing her brain cancer, Alyssa Erwin, on the other side of the country in Oregon, there's a woman named Brittany Maynard, who was diagnosed with the exact same kind of brain cancer and who chose to take her own life under the, I forget what the actual title was, it's the act in Oregon that allowed you to take your own life. And she took her own life because nobody gave her the option of trying this cannabis oil. Meanwhile, Alyssa Erwin has cured her own brain cancer twice with the CBD oil. So it just goes to show you that people are so manipulated by these Western medicine propaganda that they completely fail to understand that there are other options out there. And then we get into the idea that there's legal action if you even try to go another route. And yet someone like Brittany Maynard, who was in her 20s at the prime of her life, chose to take her own life so she didn't have to live through all the terrible things that come, usually because of the chemotherapy that they force on you. But instead of even trying something that's verifiably shown to actually do the job, it's just so very sad that there's such a stranglehold on everything we do by these corporations, Big Pharma specifically in this case, and these drug companies that are completely controlling the minds of these politicians and usually through their pocketbooks and allowing and really not allowing this information to really reach the entire population when there's so many people suffering out there today that could be completely alleviated with so many natural possibilities. It frustrates me. And then again, talking about someone like Jeff Sessions, who is ridiculously trying to roll these things back based on things that have been debunked more times than I can count. Moving on to the next story coming from the antimedia.com. As Russia's military shrinks, U.S. Navy forms a new fleet to counter them. Russia's military spending has been declining in recent years and is expected to shrink even more in the next few years. Despite this, the U.S. seems to have no problem using Russia as an excuse to keep justifying more military spending. The latest move from the U.S. is to form an entire new naval fleet. The U.S. Second Fleet was dismantled in 2011, both to save money and because there is realistically no need for them. This fleet, which is responsible for the U.S. East Coast and the Northern Atlantic, is making a comeback, with Navy officials claiming a, quote, great power competition against Russia. Even a cursory examination shows this is nonsense. Russia's Navy is much older and far smaller than America's. Moreover, Russia doesn't have a fleet in the Atlantic in the first place. The closest thing to such a fleet would be Russia's Northern Fleet, which is focused on the Arctic. It's such a clear effort to use fear-mongering about Russia to continue to bloat the military spending budget and increase the military-industrial complex. It's something we've been talking about extensively over the last so many months. And that's the prime reason for all of this propaganda about Russia and North Korea and whatever they can point out to continue to spend more than the next 8 countries combined, which is already the case. Yet we somehow need more to combat a problem that's not there. We have to begin to recognize this. And which takes us into the very next story coming from ZeroHedge.com. U.S. Navy laser cannons could replace Gatling guns, missiles on warships. I mean, just it's so frustrating. I mean, all this time and money spent on war and new and more efficient ways of killing, yet we cannot find ways to pay our teachers or provide school books for our kids that aren't from the 1970s, or fix the water crisis in this country or its crumbling infrastructure in general, or with what it costs to make and supply just one of these lasers, maybe end homelessness in the U.S. or for a fraction of the war budget right now, end world hunger, which we've already shown is $30 billion a year, which is such a small fraction of what we spend on war efforts around the world. But no, let's make sure we keep the munitions companies happy and make sure we keep building these weapons so the government can sell them to the current dictators they support, who they can then later liberate with a regime change and take them back for the next dictator de jure. Well, let me ask you something. When was the last time the U.S. was attacked by another country? The bombardment of New Orleans in World War I? The attack on Pearl Harbor in World War II? If you say 9/11, you have to leave the room. I'm just kidding, but you need to do more research on what 9/11 really was. Even Pearl Harbor is arguable, as there's much debate around whether it was a false flag. We know at the very least that it was allowed to be carried out. So New Orleans, 1918? Why don't we just say Pearl Harbor for the sake of argument? So 1941, almost 80 years ago. That's not to say that there's no reason for a sound defense. Despite all of the U.S. war efforts being absurdly labeled defense, they are nothing of the kind. They are the definition of an offensive, meaning that we spend all this money under the guise of defense when the aggressive actions being carried out instead are not only unjustified, but quite literally unnecessary. And many consumed with the U.S. empire lies will argue that we're under constant threat, I guess by ISIS or some other verifiable U.S. Western creation. And that in and of itself is very debatable, even disregarding its true origins. But that all stems from 9/11. And think about what the 9/11 false flag allowed. The justification to claim that we have this phantom threat, that it's always usable to carry out war overseas. Ironically, in the name of defending the country. How ridiculous is that? So without 9/11, there is no war, meaning there's no war machine, no military-industrial complex, at least as we know it today. It's almost hard to imagine, isn't it? There are children, teenagers even, who have never known anything but war, who were conditioned in school to see this as normal, the American way. That's horrifying. And I doubt it was what the founders envisioned. But maybe I'm wrong in that assumption, as many can no doubt make a good case for. But a lifetime of war in our names is certainly not what most people see themselves as or this country. But bringing this back to the lasers, sure, let's continue building more advanced weapons of war, more efficient killing machines, when the U.S. and its allies are the only real aggressors. Let's keep that war machine turning, lest we upset the defense contractors who pull all the strings in Washington, at least all the strings that matter. But you know what could change that? You. Should you choose to put aside your differences and false political ideologies and realize that these ideas were put here for that very reason, to keep us looking at each other as the war carries on. For more information on the topics discussed, make sure you check out thelastamericanvagabond.com or one of the important independent sources in the show notes below. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.